ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, welcome to The World Today. It's Wednesday, the 29th of October. I'm Andy Park, coming to you from Gadigal Land in Sydney. Today, the government now concedes the Bureau of Meteorology has lost community confidence with its redesigned website. And, oh, Basil, remembering actress Prunella Scales, Sybil, in Fawlty Towers, dead at the age of 93.
Polly cannot cope!
Well, she can't fall over waiters or get herself jammed under desks or start burglar alarms or lock people in burning rooms or fire extinguishers straight in her own face. But I should think the hotel can do without that sort of coping for a couple of days. What do you think, Basil?
Parts of Jamaica have been inundated as one of the strongest storms on record moves across the island Caribbean nation. Hurricane Melissa touched down as a catastrophic Category 5 storm, but has since been downgraded to a Category 4. So far, there's been at least 7 deaths in Jamaica, Haiti, and the Dominican Republic, as Bridget Fitzgerald reports.
Destructive winds continue across Jamaica as Hurricane Melissa moves slowly from the southwest to the north.
It's serious here, you know?
In this coastal community near the capital, Kingston, on the eastern side of the island, locals say they're grateful they appear to have been spared the brunt of the storm. One resident, Siobhan Donaldson, says the hurricane took a turn and swung away from his home, but he says he feels for those that have been less fortunate.
It benefit me. I'm really sorry for who it really touched, because they're my fellow Jamaicans and we are love.
Melissa made landfall as a Category 5 hurricane with winds close to 300 kilometres an hour, making it one of the strongest storms on record to hit the region. Robian Williams is a journalist from Jamaica radio station Nationwide 90 FM.
From what I can tell you, we are impacted severely. We're being told of people being electrocuted, live wires in water. It is just really scary.
Carol Francis is a journalist with the Public Broadcasting Corporation of Jamaica.
You have the roofs of homes gone. You have houses that are homes that are flooded, agricultural lands that are flattened. So there is damage, devastation right across the parishes.
Around 15,000 people have been evacuated to shelters across Jamaica, and hundreds of thousands more lost power as the storm hit. Carol Francis says Jamaicans were as ready as they could be.
The government did an excellent job of getting people to understand how serious this was.
United States National Hurricane Center Director Michael Brennan says storm conditions remain very dangerous, especially in the north of the country.
We still have your tropical storm conditions across the island, hurricane warning in effect, the potential for 6 to 12 inches of additional rainfall across the island, leading to isolated storm totals as high as 30 inches.
Evan Thompson is the head of Jamaica's meteorological office.
Flooding is expected. Landslides are expected. Storm surge is expected. And those strong winds, we will not be able to escape, especially if you're in the path of this system and in the path close to the eye of the system.
The Red Cross says up to 1.5 million people in Jamaica could be directly affected by the storm. And as it moves across the Caribbean and north to Cuba, there are concerns for hundreds of thousands of people who'll be displaced. Stefan Dujarric, a spokesperson for the Secretary General of the United Nations, says the World Food Programme is preparing 2,000 relief aid kits that will be deployed to the region once travel is permitted.
In Cuba, where the hurricane is expected to make landfall overnight in the eastern part of the island, preparations of pre-positioning of supplies and assets are still underway. Authorities plan to evacuate about 500,000 people to safer ground.
The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs is also assisting with evacuations and emergency relief in Haiti.
Bridget Fitzgerald. The federal government has conceded the Bureau of Meteorology has lost community confidence with its new website. The redesigned weather site was launched last week at the same time as severe weather patterns hit several states. There's been a steady flow of complaints from farmers. Now, the Nationals leader David Littleproud is calling for accountability, as Oliver Gordon reports.
Nationals leader David Littleproud is unhappy with the country's flagship weather forecasters.
Heads should roll on this. $4.1 million of Australian taxpayers' money. The Bureau of Meteorology has not got a good record.
Billed as modern and sleek, the Bureau's new website launched last week. Complaints came in thick and fast. In response, the agency said the new site still held the same information as the old one. It's a claim the Nationals leader disputes.
Previously, you could put a GPS setting into the site and you could have your location identified on that map. So you could see those fronts coming through. If they don't have that information, then effectively they're running blind.
He'd like to have seen more testing on the site before launch.
It's a whole new user system. And if you're going to change probably what is one of the most popular parts of a website, I would have thought there would have been some testing done before you did that.
That's how Tasmanian spraying contractor Rodney Fowler feels. He sprays chemicals on farms to control weeds, pests and diseases.
You need to know what the wind is doing. You need to know how far the rain is away and temperature. We rely heavily on the Bureau to provide good, concise, clear information that you don't have to scroll through to find.
Rodney Fowler is having trouble accessing the highly localised information he used regularly on the old site.
I understand that the change needs to take place at times. This just seems to be, nobody's really got the time to sit there and scroll through on your phone and get your two fingers on the screen and widen the map out and all that type of thing. I just want to look at what's happening in the northwest coast of Tasmania. It doesn't worry me about what's going on down in Hobart, down the south or wherever, up in the east. I just want to know what's going on in our little patch. How long have I got before I need to pull up stumps? And it just doesn't give you a clear enough, concise sort of information.
Are you confident that that information is not in the new website, or is it just not as accessible?
Look, I think it's there, but it's not as accessible.
The Bureau website receives about 1.8 million visits every day. Those numbers can increase to 5.7 million during extreme weather. The redesign of the website has been described by a BOM spokesperson as the most complex technological transformation ever undertaken by the agency. When it comes to community feedback and testing, the BOM claims feedback was overwhelmingly positive during a 12-month beta testing phase. Despite this, Federal Environment Minister Murray Watt has met with the Weather Bureau's chief to discuss the public's concerns and made it clear the agency must urgently improve the website's usability. Energy Minister Chris Bowen also conceding the site has lost public support.
You know, I've seen the reports. The Bureau clearly has work to do in that it has lost community confidence in the new website.
Tasmanian spraying contractor Rodney Fowler hopes the Bureau can get it right and says he's willing to help.
Take the criticism on board. Don't take it to heart. Give us a phone call. We'd be more than happy to talk. Some of our ideas may not work. I understand that. And change doesn't come easy to some people, but I think they've done a bit of a backward on this one.
Tasmanian spraying contractor Rodney Fowler ending that report by Oliver Gordon. Israel launched fresh strikes overnight, killing at least 26 people, according to Gaza's health authorities. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordered the attacks after he claimed Hamas had breached the ceasefire agreement by shooting at Israeli positions. Both sides have accused the other of violating the US brokered deal, but say they remain committed to the ceasefire. Here's Julia Bergen.
Slumped on a hospital bed frame, Tara Banar is covered in blood and bandages after his home was hit on Tuesday by Israeli warplanes.
We were reading the news about Netanyahu's threats and attacks on Gaza, and then the attack happened right at our house. The roof fell on us. Our neighbours came and pulled us from under the rubble. Me, my wife, my daughters, my sons, and my wife's father.
He's one of many Palestinians impacted by the latest round of Israeli strikes on Gaza City. The targeted attacks come 3 weeks into a fragile US-led ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, both sides claiming the other has broken the terms of the agreement. Israel has not given a reason for these specific attacks on Gaza City, but it follows allegations Hamas launched anti-tank rockets and handed over human remains that were 2 years old and not belonging to missing Israeli hostages.
The Prime Minister ordered a meeting to take place at the IDF headquarters with senior-ranked security officials to discuss the serious repercussions the terror group will now face.
Hamas denied the attacks and reiterated its commitment commitment to handing over hostage remains. The same day, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordered his military to, quote, immediately carry out forceful strikes in the Gaza Strip. Hamas has since delayed the planned handover of hostage remains. For Israeli families awaiting the return of loved ones, that means the anxious wait continues.
It's so unpredictable, it's so...
There's no definite timeline, there's no
It's almost like a Russian roulette, that you don't know if your son is going to be the one coming tonight or the day after. And it really is kind of another climax of our 2 years of terror that we've been under.
US Vice President J.D. Vance says these, quote, little skirmishes between Hamas and Israel are to be expected, and the ceasefire remains intact. Asha Castlebury-Hernandez is a former US government Middle East advisor.
When it comes to implementation of any peace process, there's always a struggle with it in terms of how to move forward or proceed when it comes to Middle East deals. So it's unfortunate that it's happened, but not surprised, because I pretty much knew that there was going to be some road bumps along the way.
As recovery efforts continue and aid slowly trickles into the devastated Palestinian territory, Asha Castlebury-Hernandez is confident the ceasefire will hold.
We're seeing the international community more involved than ever at an unprecedented moment. They really want to end this war or conflict.
Some observers believe the strikes were designed to make a point and do not signal a return to war.
Even if Mr. Netanyahu wants kind of to return to war, or to have this expanding this operation, I think that the Trump administration is pressuring Israel not to make too much of it. To make the point that Israel is unhappy, that's one thing.
Dan Arbel is a former Israeli diplomat and now a Washington-based U.S. foreign policy and Middle East expert.
The U.S. is watching this very closely, as it is very much interested in seeing phases 2 and 3 of the agreement to begin. So far, we're still in phase 1, and for phase 1 to end, we need to finish with this return of hostage remains.
Dan Arbel, a former Israeli diplomat, ending that report by Julia Bergen. Thanks for listening to The World Today on ABC Radio across Australia and on the Listen app. Subscribe to the podcast for all our stories. Just search for The World Today. Children's safety advocates say a lack of checks and transparency have enabled pedophiles to work in childcare, shifting from centre to centre. The federal government hopes a new national register for staff will be in place soon, but some worry it won't go far enough. Tanya Dendrinos.
Susie Wilson says her eyes were opened to concerning gaps in child safety during her time running childcare centres.
We are unfortunately not screening people appropriately before they come in, and then really not monitoring people appropriately once they are through the door.
The former Victorian government advisor has set up her own safeguarding platform, Child Aware, for providers, allowing them to do what she calls more appropriate reference and background checking of staff.
You know, the second point is really about capturing any complaints and feedback that have been received in relation to these workers. We know that pedophiles jump around from centre to centre between jurisdictions. And what our system does is capture all those complaints and all those pieces of feedback that parents or other staff may have made along the journey and provide those there as a reference point for organisations.
Susie Wilson believes the platform is more comprehensive than the federal government's plan for a national register to track educators. But others argue a national government-run free service is what's needed, including Griffith University's Dr. Brian Jenkins, who's a criminologist specialising in child protection. He says the incoming government system, which is being developed by the Australian Children's Education and Care Quality Authority, will make a difference by identifying red flags.
When allegations are made, it can be very challenging to go back through records and find, you know, where those people have worked in the past and to identify potential victims, to identify other potential witnesses as well. And particularly in a childcare sector, which is privatised and, you know, centres can change hands, management can change, record keeping is not necessarily up to scratch all of the time.
Elizabeth Deeth is the former CEO of the Early Learning and Care Council of Australia, which represents more than 2,000 not-for-profit and private providers. She says a national register was required years ago.
We have the Working with Children check, but that does not cover all of the potential red flags that could have occurred over previous employment. It's always difficult when you don't have a credible history of employment. This educator register that's being set up by the Australian government through ASEQA is going to respond to that.
The government register will store information on workers, including their identity, employment history and training. Patrice Fitzgerald is the principal lawyer and director of law firm Safe Space Legal and has worked in child protection and safeguarding for almost 15 years. She says the government register is a positive step.
What we have in Australia is, from a legal perspective, such a fragmented system. So each state and territory across Australia has different laws, different legislation, different levels of oversight when it comes to child safety. So from my perspective, I think that this will bridge some of those gaps.
Testing of the register will begin in December, with a national rollout expected in February. But Patrice Fitzgerald says there's a lot more work to be done to properly address child safety in the sector.
There's also a really strong obligation on the organisation. At the end of the day, it is the organisation that should be ensuring that children who enter their centres are protected and safe, and that the people who are working there are suitable. So from the perspective of a lot of the work that we do, it's really upskilling the organisation to understand what their obligations are, number one, but to ensure that they're taking those preventative steps.
Patrice Fitzgerald there, the director of the law firm Safe Space Legal, ending that report by Tanya Dendrinos and Isabel Masali. And if you've experienced childhood trauma or abuse, you can call the Blue Knot helpline on 1300 657 380. Queensland's Education Minister has launched an immediate investigation into how nine high schools across the state taught Year 12 students the wrong topic for their end-of-year history exam. One of the state's top schools apologised to students and parents yesterday ahead of the ancient history exam later this afternoon. The school told students they had focused on the wrong emperor after the curriculum changed at the beginning of the year. Kathleen O'Connor has more.
Year 12 exams are already a stressful time for students as they aim for scores to get into their dream universities. And now many in Queensland are feeling even more pressure. John Paul Langbrook is Queensland's Education Minister.
For all of us, as parents or students who have been through situations like this, it would be extremely traumatic. And I want to reassure those students that we'll be making every investigation into how this happened.
Around 140 Year 12 students across Queensland were taught the wrong topic, spending the last year focusing on Roman leader Augustus instead of Julius Caesar. At least nine schools, including one of Queensland's top schools, Brisbane State High, began notifying parents yesterday, apologising for the mix-up. The students are sitting the exam today. John Paul Langbrook has guaranteed special consideration for the students.
Of course, I'm very unhappy about the situation developing as it has, for the stress that it will have caused for everyone, the communications that have obviously been not carried out appropriately, and I want to make sure that we reassure those students and their parents that we'll make sure that the 75% assessment that they've already done will be scaled up to make sure that they are not disadvantaged in any way.
Emperor Augustus was the topic of the ancient history exam for the last 4 years. The topic changed to Julius Caesar just this year. The Queensland Curriculum and Assessment Authority is still in the process of checking with 172 schools which teach ancient history to see just how widespread the issue is.
And I've asked them to make sure that we're updated about whether there are any other schools that are affected.
It raised some serious questions about whether the communication to teachers was adequate. The State Education Department said a memo was sent to schools in 2023, last year, and again earlier this year, notifying them of the topic change. Once notified of the bungle, a number of schools held emergency tutorials for students on the topic last night and again this morning. Ray Lawrence is a professor of ancient history in the School of Humanities at Macquarie University.
This is just a kind of a classic mistake where they've changed the syllabus and somebody hasn't noticed the difference.
The Queensland Curriculum and Assessment Authority can't rewrite or reschedule the exams. It also can't use last year's because those questions have already been made public.
It would be fairly mortifying for the schools and absolutely terrible for the students. You can kind of see how it might happen. I mean, there is a bit of historical mess here. The name of Augustus Caesar is fairly complex because he was adopted by the Gaius Julius Caesar. Caesar, and actually was called for a bit of his life Gaius Julius Caesar, because if you're adopted, you take the name of the person.
Gianna Linton has helped tutor a number of Queensland high school students for their end of year exams.
I have never heard of something like this happening before. And the fact that it's gone unnoticed for the whole term, it's not a huge component of their assessment, but it is certainly distracting for them. The students, rightly so, will be so stressed. They've put a huge amount of effort into preparing for these.
Tutor Gianna Linton there, ending that report by Kathleen O'Connor and Rachel Mealy. British comedic actress Prunella Scales has died at the age of 93 after living with dementia for more than 10 years. Best known for her role as Sybil Fawlty in the legendary television series Fawlty Towers opposite John Cleese, Prunella Scales was in fact a prolific classical actress in theatre, TV and film across seven decades. After her diagnosis, she and her husband of 60 years, fellow actor Timothy West, worked hard to bring more awareness to the condition. Kimberly Price has more.
Basil.
Prunella Scales will best be remembered for portraying the long-suffering wife of hotelier Basil Fawlty in the classic British sitcom Fawlty Towers.
Hello, dear.
What are you doing?
I'm kissing you, dear.
Well, don't.
Born in 1932, Prunella Margaret Rumney Illingworth followed in her mother's acting footsteps, finding a deep love of theatre from an early age. At 17, she won a scholarship to the Old Vic Theatre School in London and 2 years later became an assistant stage manager at the Bristol Old Vic. She also adopted her mother's maiden name for her stage name. Now Prunella Scales, her breakout role came in the 1961 BBC sitcom Marriage Lines, starring opposite comedic actor Richard Briers.
A new chair?
Yes, it's a special one.
But it's miles too big for the baby.
It's a nursing chair, George. Your mother paid for it.
Well, let her sit in it.
Almost 15 years later, she won her career-defining role as quick-witted hotel gossiper Sybil Fawlty.
Have a look at these hinges, you know, the ones we've been...
Do you really imagine, even in your wildest dreams, that a girl like this could possibly be interested in an ageing, brilliantine stick insect like you?
Despite topping the British Film Institute's list of the 100 greatest British television programmes in 2000, John Cleese and Connie Booth's Fawlty Towers initially received poor reviews and only ran for 12 episodes over two seasons. But the chaotic comedy proved a lasting hit with audiences.
You don't seem to realise that I'm needed at the hotel!
No, you're not. It's running beautifully without you.
Polly cannot cope!
Well, she can't fall over waiters or get herself jammed under desks, or start burglar alarms, or lock people in burning rooms, or fire extinguishers straight in her own face. But I should think the hotel can do without her sort of coping for a couple of days. What do you think, Basil?
Sybil Fawlty is the role Prunella Scales would later credit as her career high point.
That's to do with the brilliance of the writing. That's thanks to John and Connie. It really is. And it was beautifully directed and very, very strongly cast. And we had a lot of help and encouragement from the sort of the production team. But really, it's about to do with the writing.
She was also a veteran of London's West End, voiced various radio sitcoms, and won over audiences again for her portrayal of Queen Elizabeth II in the play and television series A Question of Attribution.
If something is not what it claims to be, what is it?
An enigma.
That is, I think, the sophisticated answer.
In her later years, Prunella and her husband Timothy West took audiences through the canals of Britain and Europe for their television programme Great Canal Journeys.
We're celebrating our golden wedding this year.
Yeah, 50 years. Feels more like 14.
I know.
In it, the pair touched on Prunella Scales' dementia diagnosis in 2014. Theirs would be a devoted partnership of 61 years until Timothy West's death in November last year. In a statement, her sons paid tribute to their mum and said she was watching Fawlty Towers the day before she died.
Yes, they don't make TV like that anymore. Kimberly Price reporting there. And that's all from the World Today team. Thanks for your company. I'm Andy Park.
Hi, Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast.
The cost of medical treatments and dental work in Australia can be exorbitant. So, no wonder more and more people are accessing their superannuation funds early to pay for things like IVF and dentist bills. Today, ABC reporter Selena Edmonds on her investigation into how the rules are being exploited. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.